So hi everyone, I hope you can hear me. I'm going to try to give a very old school talk. Can you hear me?
Okay.
I see.
So you need to talk to the room.
Okay.
And the mic is just for all the... There's about 30 people watching you on video at
okay.
the moment.
So good morning everyone, my name is Philippe Morin. I'm a policy officer in the European Commission. I work in DG Connect in the Cybersecurity Policies Unit. And today I'm here to talk to you about the implementation of the Cyber Resilience Act. So because I couldn't get my slides to work, I'm going to try to use the board like an old school professor. So the Cyber Resilience Act. So the Cyber Resilience Act came into force in December 2024 after a 2.5 year process of negotiations in which the open source community has participated to unprecedented extent. And we're now excited to start the actual work of making this happen. And the way we're doing that is by, as much as possible, setting up the conditions for stakeholders to participate in a process of discussion of all of the relevant legal topics. Before a show of hands, does anybody not know what the Cyber Resilience Act is in this room? Okay, that's enough people. So the Cyber Resilience Act is the first European legislation, perhaps even the first global legislation, to mandate product security requirements. So it's the first time that product security becomes mandatory. And the scope is products with digital elements. So that includes hardware and software, also the smart products. So it's a sort of legal scope of a product that includes the remote data processing part, the cloud service associated to a product. So of course, all of these things start to raise questions since it's relatively new that regulation touches on software, for instance, or the cloud services associated to a product. So there's a lot of discussion. So there's discussions on how to cover open source. Open source was largely excluded from scope, but there's also other things like what does this remote data processing solutions, what does it actually mean? How do different companies interact when they provide a smart product? If I'm a manufacturer of the hardware, but I'm contracting the software as a service or platform as a service with Amazon or Microsoft or anyone else, and how do we contractually arrange compliance to cybersecurity requirements that are horizontal? So this is really the main thing about the CRA. It's horizontal cybersecurity requirements. There's about 12 of them just for the products, and then another 10 or so for vulnerability handling. And they, in theory, apply in a risk-based way to any product. So what that means, risk-based, is really important, is that if you have a risk, then you're going to have to try to find a way for the essential requirement to cover that risk. Even if you can't find it in the essential requirements, you're still going to have to cover that risk. But really, the essential requirements are meant to be a way of sort of focusing the attention of manufacturers, that they really have to look at these requirements and see, how can I apply it? So this becomes really kind of a both a theoretical and a practical question. And the way we're trying to help everyone to do that is with this figure called harmonized standards. So the CRA is, as I said, EU product legislation. And EU product legislation has been around for some 40 or 50 years. It underpins the EU single market. And it uses this legal concept of harmonized standards. Harmonized standards are regular European standards, but they have been published, the reference has been published in the official journal of the EU, and that's because they should only be published, so they should only be harmonized when they meet the requirements of the legislation. So, of course, it becomes crucial to understand, first of all, what are the requirements, and then how do we meet them? And I think one of the key things that we've been working on already for a year and a half, almost 2 years on this standardization process, has been to try to clarify what does it mean to meet these essential requirements, these cybersecurity requirements? And a lot of it revolves around identifying risks, given a use case, or the legislation calls it the intended purpose, the reasonably foreseeable use, and then defining mitigations for those risks. And if you can define a mitigation that everyone agrees is sort of the state-of-the-art mitigation, then we are happy. We can say, yes, for this risk, there's that mitigation. And if you apply that standard or that mitigation, you receive a presumption of conformity. And the presumption of conformity makes your life a lot easier, because you can just claim very easily, I comply with the CRA, and nobody's really going to argue about that, unless there's a problem in the future, that could happen. But in principle, the presumption of conformity as a legal figure makes it a lot easier to comply. So we've been trying to engage with standardization bodies in order to push out these standards that meet state of the art. And as open source practitioners, you probably know that the work that's done by the open source community is often state of the art. So a lot of this also, our interest in engaging with open source is really to see, guys, you know, you are the real experts out there, so please come and participate in this process so we can all learn from you and we can all make the market a little bit more transparent when it comes to the cybersecurity practices. But this is one of my main interests in engaging with the open source community. Okay, but there are problems in the open source participation, and we've been trying to address those in a number of different ways by sort of supporting the engagement of the community, several different communities. So we had to get some action grants to the standardization bodies, the European standardization bodies, Sencenelec and ETSI. And as a requirement for that money to be given to them, they have to agree to hold additional external stakeholder consultations. And those are going to be happening, by the way, I'm going to just put this here, from April, May onwards. So if you wish to participate in this process, you can, and you should get ready because it's going to happen quite soon. First drafts should be start to be publicly discussed from April or May onwards. And then it's going to be a relatively short window, by the way, because it's only until, depending on the standard, so we have two types of standards for horizontals. That means probably until July, August 2025. For the verticals, that's product-specific standards. Probably until October, November. Thank you for the question. So the way that the standardization work is set up, that we have proposed it to the experts, and this is sort of the architecture that is underpinning all of this work, is that we have two types of standards. The horizontal standards, kind of a framework approach, the sort of very product agnostic, very abstract statements about what does it mean to have a risk-based approach or risk management in your product security lifecycle. That we call that the type A standard, by the way. And that's the sort of the tip of the pyramid, type A. And then you have sort of the